Lunchtime Live with Kira Kelly on News Talk.
It is Thursday afternoon, which means I am joined now by the lovely Eoin Magee, who is here to answer all your consumer-related financial questions. COVID, pensions, mortgages, you name it. This guy has all the answers. Hello, Eoin. You're very welcome.
Hiya, Kira. I was thinking about your nostalgic TV shows.
Go on.
I remember Friday nights, I lived out in Dublin 15, and we used to go into Sean McDermott Street for Anne Toohey, I think her name was, to teach us how to swim on a Friday evening. And afterwards, we got a bag of chips. Dad would buy us a bag of chips and we'd go back and we'd watch Tarzan, and I was allowed to stay up late.
Tarzan, yeah. Ah, listen, yep, memory lane.
You're nostalgic. That's it.
Memory lane. We're showing our age is what we're actually doing. But anyway, come here, there's tons of questions for you. Let me lash into them, as it were. Kira and Eoin, a question about the temporary wage subsidy scheme. There is employers that are back at the same level of business as they were before lockdown, for example, in construction, but still paying part of their wages through the temporary wage subsidy scheme. And then the employees getting a tax refund to bring up net pay to the same as before. But the employees' gross amount is only small. Should employers be taking employees off the scheme back up to the same, if the same levels of business are back up and the employee is back working fully, also will we be hit for tax at the end of the year? Do you understand that, my friend?
I totally understand it. I totally understand it. So basically, the employers are getting 70% of the wage, in most cases paid by the revenue, and some employers are topping that up by another 30% themselves, and some of them aren't, and some of them are paying less than that, and they're not obliged to top it up at all. So the employer could effectively be having their staff's wages paid by revenue and not putting anything to it themselves.
Okay. And are they allowed to do that?
They are absolutely allowed to do it. The idea of the scheme, remember, was to make sure employers still existed when this was all over.
Okay.
It was to save them, to make sure they existed. Now, the reality is that when you signed up to this, when someone signed up to this, when a boss signed up to this, they had to sign a declaration to say that their turnover was going to drop by 25%. Now, in simple terms, for every 100 euros of sales that they used to get, that they're now going to get less than 75.
Okay.
And they signed a declaration. It was really simple. That's why we had so many people sign up to it so quickly. But at some stage in the future, and there's no clear guideline as to how this will happen, but you're going to have to prove that to revenue. You signed a declaration and you're going to have to prove it. But not only that, revenue have said that every employer who signed up to this scheme, their name will be publicised. And that's fine. It was just to say, look, here's all the people who availed of it. I think there's 50,000 employers have signed up to this scheme already. So, but they will have to prove it. And if, and it's reasonable to expect that if the sales didn't drop by 25%, that they will have to pay that money back to revenue.
Okay.
So to answer that person's question, yeah, if they, it would be in the employer's best interest to stop taking the wage subsidy right now if they think that the sales are going to go back to normal and they're going to have to pay it back to revenue anyway. But it's not really a concern for the employee.
He or she was worried about his tax, their tax.
Yeah. Yeah, that's because the piece that's coming from revenue isn't being taxed at the moment. It'll be taxed later on. But then again, that's just about self-management yourself and putting the money to one side. You're not being disadvantaged in any way from a tax position. What is happening, though, is if your employer is not topping you up to 100%, you're on less wages right now. And that's probably why they're pushing to get themselves back onto the ordinary scheme, but back onto the ordinary wages. But the employer needs to make sure that the scheme is used for what it's used for, which is to make sure that the employer still exists.
Okay, and so even if they are back up to full whack, the fact that they lost turnover while they were closed down means that they still may be down to the 25% or whatever. Is that what?
Absolutely. And think about construction as well. If this person's in building offices or commercial buildings, whatever about residential, they still have a big problem. But offices are probably going to work is going to look different. And your boss might be looking at this going, I don't know how many office buildings I'm going to build next year. And I just need to keep all the cash I have at the moment and really protect the business so I can keep these people in the job for as long as I can.
It could be absolutely fair enough. That's great. Yep. Thank you for that. Kira, please ask Eoin the name of a good illness protection policy in the case of serious illness while in employment. Thank you for Marie in Cork. Can you advise people on stuff like that?
It's something I never do, Kira. I will never endorse a particular product or product provider because they're very specific things. They're things that one would suit one person, wouldn't suit another person.
So you'd have to sit down.
I don't like giving those big companies plugs either. So what I would say is that there are two types of illness cover. One is where you get a lump of money if you get diagnosed with cancer, heart attack or stroke would cover 75% of claims. And the other one pays you out a wage it's usually 75% of your wage, less what you're getting from social welfare, until you go back to work or you retire, whichever happens first. So you're out of work sick, they pay you a wage. You really need to get some advice around which one, or if both are what you need, or which one is going to suit you best. But there, to be honest with you, there's
is that kind of question Owen, so specific that you'd need to go to a broker to discuss your own personal issues or whatever?
Absolutely. A financial planner, and a good financial planner, will look at your family history and everything else and say, okay, what's the thing that scares you the most, and what do you really want to cover off, and what are your big fears, and let's use the insurance to cover off your fears so that you sleep better at night. And that's the important thing. And it is a very specific question, and I'd never get product specific and with something like this, because it's just too individual.
Okay, that's totally
a good financial planner will help them out.
That is totally fair enough. Please ask Owen what is the best way to pay off an overdraft that I've been on for years and years.
Treat it like a loan. One of the problems with the overdraft is it's on tap. You just dip into it whenever you want. You swipe your card and you increase the overdraft. It's very easy. So what you need to do is you need to say, okay, I've got most, there are a lot of people out there who are on the same wage, whether it's true wage subsidy or not, but they're on the same wage, but their expenses have dropped at the moment because just life isn't happening. And what I would say is if you've got a €500 overdraft, or let's say €1,000 overdraft, and you're constantly in it, there's two things that need to shift. First is your zero is now minus €1,000. And what you need to do is refocus on your zero is zero. So when your bank account goes to, like people who have an overdraft of €1,000 that they constantly hit, when they're at minus 300, they believe, oh, sure, I still have another €700 left. You don't. You're minus 300. So reset your clock back to zero being your new zero, and then treat the €1,000 overdraft that I'm going to knock it down by €100 a month. I'm going to treat it like a loan, and I'm going to spend €100 a month less and reduce it down that
way. So if you're €1,000 overdrawn this month, next month you want to be €900, the following month €800, that kind of thing?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's really difficult to do it. So sometimes people need to reclock their zero in increments. So my zero at the moment is minus €1,000. Next month my zero is minus €900. The month after my zero is minus €800. And you need to get yourself back to zero being your real zero. And that's the only way you get out of it. If you're really stuck and it's a bigger loan, a bigger amount of money, you can talk to your bank and say, can I have a term loan for this?
Can you
cancel my overdraft? Give me €1,000 loan over 12 months or 2 years or 3 years or whatever it is. And they will entertain that. But that's a once-off get out of jail. Don't keep doing this, because the temptation is you get €1,000 loan, you leave the overdraft open, and in 6 months' time you have €1,000 loan and a new overdraft.
Tell me this though, is it maybe it's no difference, is it worse or better value to have a loan or an overdraft, or are they the same?
It would be much better value for the loan. Like the interest rate in the loan would probably be somewhere around 6 or 8%. Overdraft could be 15, 16, 17%.
Okay, so get off that overdraft now, sort of thing.
In simple terms, in interest terms, you could be looking at €1,000, you could be looking at somewhere between 60 and 80 euros in simple interest, in interest for a year if it was left alone. On an overdraft, €1,000 would be costing you around 160, 170 euros for the year in interest.
All right, fair enough.
In simple interest terms.
Hi, Kira. I have 6 years left to retirement. I have two pensions and I have no idea how good or bad they are performing. Where will I get honest, no biased advice on how to maximise these benefits? And that's from Huey.
So Huey, again, here we go. It sounds like financial planners trying to get business for financial planners. But Huey needs to get a financial planner to have a look at this. They can go to their pension provider and they can get numbers from them about how it performed last year and over the last 3 years and 5 years and 10 years. But the problem with that is it, they don't know what they're comparing it against. Like, what do the numbers actually mean? Oh, it did 8% last year. Is that good? Is that bad? Or what is it? So what they really need to do is look at what it's invested in, how it's invested. Is it in the right place for this stage of his life? And really get some good financial advice. If he has those pensions through work, usually work have a pension advisor that you can get access to, and they can talk to them about it and they can give them some guidance on how it is. But to be honest with you, when you're at this pivotal point, pay for some advice. Get someone independent to look at it. Have a look at the Central Bank's website. They have a list of all the financial advisors there. FPSB is the Financial Planning Services Board. They've all the CFPs in the country listed there. And have a look around at those different websites and you can see there what the advisors are. But the best way to find a good financial planner is to ask your friends.
All right.
Who do you deal with?
Thank you very much for that, Owen. I will talk to Owen McGee, of course, MD of Prosperous Financial and All Round Good Egg, next Thursday. And he will answer all your queries then too. I am afraid we are out of time on Lunchtime Live today. Moncrief's up next. Do stay tuned for him. But my thanks as ever to the team today, to senior producer Claire Darmody, to Michael Quilligan on sound, to Emma Cawley on production, and Ross Leahy on research. We will be back tomorrow with the madness, of course, that is Live and Unscripted Lunchtime Live. 1890 453 108 is the comment line, or you can email us at lunchtimelive@newstalk.com, and we would love to hear your wacky ideas for what we should talk about. But for me, Kira, have a wonderful Thursday afternoon. Enjoy the sunshine. Thank you for listening. Thank you for talking.
Lunchtime Live with Kira Kelly on News Talk.